Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of TheKnicksBlog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. As always, I'm your host, Anthony Donahue, with you, going to take you up until about 10 p.m. right here on TheKnicksBlog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. As always, you can hit me on Facebook, facebook.com/AnthonyPDonahue. You can follow me on Twitter, AnthonyMSG. And, of course, you can pick up your phone and call this show. It's 646-478-5554. Once again, that's 646-478-5554. And as always, we have a big show planned for you tonight. Peter Rosenberg, the host of the Hot 97 Morning Show, who's actually a Celtics fan, but a big hoops fan, big hip-hop fan, will be joining me on the show in about 15 minutes to talk basketball and hip-hop. So that's very exciting. I'm a huge Hot 97 fan. I'm a huge hip-hop fan. Big fan of Peter Rosenberg. So I'm excited to have him on the show in about 15 minutes. The Knicks made it through the first day of practice today with zero injuries. That's good. You know, back in 6-7 years ago, I remember every day after the first day of practice, you'd hear about Eddie Curry pulling something or Jerome James on the bike. So just happy and blessed that everybody made it through day one. Mike Woodson announced that Raymond Felton will be the starting point guard. So that's something we all expected, but it's only one day of practice. But Raymond Felton will be the starting point guard. Now, will they go with the Raymond Felton, Jason Kidd backcourt until Ronnie Brewer gets back? That's a possibility. I don't think they will, but it's definitely a possibility just because I don't love J.R. Smith off the bench, and I don't think Woody loves J.R. Smith, but I don't think Woody loves J.R. Smith off the bench either. So tons to get to. The Knicks had their annual media day yesterday, and obviously, you know, I can't take media day too serious. A lot of good quotes. My favorite quote coming from Carmelo Anthony, who I'm a huge fan of, a huge supporter of, when he said he cut down on the potato chips over the summer. So good job, Melo, cutting down on the potato chips. But I think Carmelo Anthony looked great. I think, you know, the thing I love about media day, especially as a fan, is you like to see who looks good, who looks bad. And I'll tell you what, most of the Knicks players, I mean, no one at the training center yesterday looked bad. I didn't see one guy that I was like, oh man, he didn't have a good summer. Raymond Felton looked good. Marcus Camby looked good. Obviously, Melo looked good. Chandler Stat looks back to the stat that he looked like 2 years ago. Everybody looked good. Everybody looks like they're ready to go. And it's an exciting time of the year for New York Knicks fans, for basketball fans around the league. It's a very exciting time. And, you know, listen, the Knicks have yet to play a game yet. A month from tonight, the Knicks will open up at the Garden versus the Miami Heat. So less than a month until the Knicks open up the regular season Thursday night, November 1st, at the Barclays Center, which is going to be quite the interesting night. And I'll tell you what, and I said this on the Spreecast last night, is that after being at the Jay-Z concert Friday night, I think there'll be a ton of Knicks fans there at the Barclays Center opening night, but I don't know if it's going to be more Knicks fans than Nets fans. And the reason I'm saying that is because being around Brooklyn last week, man, the buzz is huge for the Nets. I mean, I knew it would be big because Brooklyn is Brooklyn, but the buzz for the Nets is huge. Every corner you went, there's Nets, people wearing Nets stuff, and at the concert, I didn't see, with the exception of myself, of course, who was rocking a Knicks hat, I didn't see anybody wearing Knicks stuff at the concert, so everybody's wearing Nets stuff, and that's understandable. It was the first night the arena was opening, but I think that night's going to be a lot more, I don't think it's going to be as Nick dominated in the crowd as you think. I hope it is. I mean, I'll be there. I'll be ready to go. I'm sure I'll get my hands on a couple tickets. It's going to be a very exciting night. As I said, give me a call, 646-478-5554. Peter Rosenberg from Hot 97 will join me in about 10 minutes, and I'll take your calls throughout the evening on the New York Knicks. Give me your thoughts. I know a lot of you guys right now are probably watching this ESPN show, which is actually awesome, and although I love doing the show, I'm missing the last half hour of it about the athletes going broke, and boy, oh boy, is it sad. It's just like, wow. I mean, I can't even imagine having the money that some of these guys have had and to lose it all. I mean, talk about Andre Rison, former NFL wide receiver, talking about, you know, I gave one of my boys, gave a friend $30,000 just for the hell of it. Never saw that friend again. Boy, some of these stories are just absolutely brutal. But you know, we're here to talk Knicks basketball, and I want to know what you think about this Knicks team coming up this season. I like what the Knicks did in the offseason. Obviously, the one big thing that everybody wants to talk about, and we don't know if it's going to be a problem yet. We don't know. It could be something good, is that obviously the core, the starting lineup is not old at all. Raymond Felton, I don't consider anybody in the starting lineup old, unless, you know, Jason Kidd ends up starting. Raymond Felton, probably Ronnie Brewer when he's there, Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire, Tyson Chandler. I don't consider any of those five guys old. Now, the guys they brought in that are going to be coming off the bench, with the exception of Steve Novak, you know, Shump won't be back till December, January, or February. But those guys have been around the block. Rasheed Wallace has been around the block, who will most likely be a Nick in the next day or two. Marcus Camby, he's been around the block. Kurt Thomas, been around the block. Jason Kidd, been around the block. These guys are old. These guys have a lot of tread on the tire. But the thing about it is that the guys that they brought in that are over the age of 37, 38, I don't expect to play much. I'm not expecting these guys to give you 30, 40 minutes a night. The only guy I think of, you know, every now and then you might have a game where Big Kurt Thomas gives you 25, 30 minutes. You might have a game where Jay Kidd gives you 30 minutes, something like that. You might have that every now and then. But I don't think that any of those guys are going to be playing major minutes. So if you look at guys like Rasheed Wallace, Big Kurt Thomas, things like that, they're only going to be asked to give you small roles. So in the limited roles that they have, because obviously guys like Carmelo Anthony, Tyson Chandler, Amari Stoudemire, Raymond Felton are going to be playing the big minutes. So those guys that are old and, you know, using a lot more Bengay than everybody else, they're not going to be playing major minutes. So it's not like they're bringing in Rasheed Wallace. It's not like they're bringing in Marcus Camby, Jason Kidd, and Kurt Thomas to play 35 minutes a game. If they did that, I think that would be a problem. But that's not what they're doing. 646-478-5554 is the number, thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in 1 minute right here on thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. Here on thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio, Anthony Donahue with you. Going to take you up until 10 p.m. right here on, as I said, thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. Give me a buzz. Talk some Knicks. Talk some NBA. And Training camp started today, and we talked about last night on the Spreecast. With this team, there's a lot of different things you can do. There's a lot of different lineups you can throw out there. And this is what Woody wants. As Woody said yesterday in Media Day, you don't necessarily win in championships in this league with young guys. And for the most part, he's partially right. Now, the thing to me is interesting. Now, as fans, we want to believe it, but did the Knicks do enough to compete with Miami? Did the Knicks do enough to compete with the Celtics? The Celtics retooled, and the Celtics are going to be a problem. Now, they brought in Jason Terry. They drafted Solinger, drafted Fab Melo. They're going to get Jeff Green back. Celtics are going to be a problem. Now, I know a lot of Knicks fans don't want to hear that. I know my next guest is going to want to hear that. But make no mistake about it. The Boston Celtics will be a problem. And as of right now, are the Knicks better than the Celtics? I think they could be, but the Knicks are going all in this year. And is it the right mix? I don't know yet. It could be, but it's tough to say. Now, I really love bringing Raymond Felton back. I think he's just going to play good basketball. I think he worked so well with Amari Stoudemire 2 years ago. I think he brings a leadership. I think Raymond Felton brings an edge. I think those are things you need, especially out of your point guard. I think with guys like Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire, you need a guy like Raymond Felton to give those guys a kick in the ass. And that's what Jason Kidd's going to do as well. Because even though Kidd is not what he was 10, 12, 15 years ago, he's still a good player. He's still an effective player. So, and also, Jason Kidd, he's a really, really good shooter. A lot better shooter than he was when he first came into the league. And even when he was in his prime with the Nets, he's a much better shooter now. So those are all things that Jason Kidd can do, and he's going to be effective. Like I said, don't expect the Jason Kidd from years ago, but, you know, he will help the Knicks, no doubt about that. 646-478-5554 is the number, theknicksblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. We'll get back to the calls in a little bit. Right now on the line, he's the host of the Hot 97 Morning Show, and I hate to say it, he is a huge Celtics fan, but he's my favorite New York radio personality right now. Please welcome to the show the one and only Peter Rosenberg. Peter, what's going on, man?
What's up, Anthony? How are you, buddy?
I am doing good. How about yourself?
I'm chilling, man. Chilling. Just watching some NFL replays and relaxing.
Oh, nice. Actually, the show to watch right now, which I was watching before the show started, is there's a show on ESPN right now, 30 for 30, about athletes going broke. And it's sad, man.
Yeah, I watched the first half of Broke, and then I DVR'd the rest to watch it with my wife later because she's a big sports head, too. It was pretty good, man. The whole 30 for 30 series is pretty awesome, and this one seems pretty dope.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Andre Rison talking about, I just gave a friend 30 grand one day. I mean, are you crazy? That's crazy.
Yeah, and a lot of NBA cats in there, too. And a lot of names that you see, and you're like, man, that guy, you remember their name, and like, dude, how did that guy spend a lot of money? Bad decision.
Oh, no question. And there's one guy, they only showed for a second. He's actually a guy who comes on my show a lot, and that's Kenny Anderson. He was a guy, I don't know if you remember the 99 lockout, right before the lockout ended, they were interviewing Kenny in the street, and he was like, yeah, man, I got to steal one of my 8 cars. And he's like basically like flat broke now.
Oh, Kenny Anderson's flat broke?
I don't know, I wouldn't go that far, say he's flat broke, but I don't know if he's balling like he was back in the late 90s, that's for sure.
Well, I doubt that. And, I mean, and as a Celtics fan, a lot of people, you know, forget when he ended up on the Celtics in the late 2000s, he was a big part of getting the Celtics to the conference finals in like 2002 or whatever year that was. He was pretty solid even all the way up then.
Oh, no question. Remember that year, 2001, 2002, when you guys lost to the Nets in the conference finals that season.
Yeah, and Kenny, and he was great. He was a big part of it.
Actually, right before you got on the air, Peter, I was actually talking about your Celtics. I go to every single Knick game. I have season tickets to the show, Knicks in my life. And one thing I was saying to the fans, and a lot of fans don't want to hear it, and I said it last year, and sure enough, you guys are in the conference finals a few minutes away from beating the Miami Heat and going back to the finals. You can't count those damn Celtics out. And I know you guys lost Ray Allen, bringing in Jason Terry, drafted Solinger, drafted Melo, going to get Jeff Green back. I mean, how are you feeling about your Celtics this year?
I think they'll be pretty solid. I mean, there's not a lot of reason to think that they won't be. I mean, You know, a lot of people have made a bigger deal about the Ray Allen thing than I think it's worth making. I think it was kind of a given that Ray would be gone, sooner than later. You know, and as much as I said Ray Allen looked like he was always supposed to be in Celtic Green, and I do think he was a perfect fit there for when he was there. And you know, he was a hired assassin. You know, and he did his job for a couple of years. But that's the kind of player he's at, and the kind of stage he's in his career. You know, I hope Jeff Green pans out. You know, Danny Ainge has a love affair with that guy. He's always wanted him. You know, the fact is, Jeff Green's never been on a team that's done really well. Some would say that his previous team got much better the second he was gone. And that's not to say he's not talented, but it could say that there's something about the role that he plays on the floor that isn't great, and I hope that's not true. But you know, the Celtics are going to be good until Paul is ineffective and KG is ineffective, and KG was so awesome in the playoffs last year. I don't think there's any reason to think the Celtics would slip further than four, you know, or something like that in the East, 4 or 5. I mean, they're just – and Rajon Rondo is one of the best players in the NBA. And if you have one of those guys on your team, I think you're going to be pretty competitive, especially when you have a couple of Hall of Famers playing next to him.
Oh, those, and as a fan, Peter, those are two guys I can't stand the most, is Rondo and Paul Pierce, man. I mean, Rondo's awesome. He's flat out one of the best point guards in the league. But Paul Pierce, man, I mean, so many times. Okay, I actually drove up to Boston for the game. I remember that Sunday afternoon game when Rondo had like a quadruple-double versus the Knicks.
During Linsanity?
Yes, I got tickets the night before. I said, I'm driving up to Boston. Here we go. Here come the Knicks. And, you know, we're at great seats, and, you know, where the Knicks are up 3. With 5 seconds left, Paul Pierce is triple-teamed, and I turn to my boy, and I go, he's going to make this shot. And sure enough, like, he nails that 3. The Knicks lose in overtime. My last trip to Boston before that was game 1 of the playoffs in 2011, and the Knicks are about to win their first playoff game in freaking 11 years, and, you know, Ray Allen hits that 3 with, like, 5 seconds left. Knicks have no timeouts. Melo bombs one from half court, so I think I got to – you probably want me to go there, but I think I got to stay away from Boston.
It's funny that you say that about Pierce, because I just think that Pierce is such an underrated assassin at the end of games, man. Like, he – you know, I'd be curious if you could tally up buzzer beaters over the last 10 years. I mean, he's right up there. He's stuck so many big ones. You know, I mean, he's – there's almost no one I'd rather – I mean, that includes players who are much better – you know, who are even much better, well, of which there aren't that many, but the few that are, I'd still rather have Pierce shooting at the end of the game. You know, and he's so great at somehow, with his old man style, he somehow still manages to, like, create a look for himself at the end of games. You know, as a Celtics fan, I'll definitely be sad when the Pierce era comes to an end.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. As a player, I definitely respect Paul Pierce. That's the weird thing about Pierce, Peter, is that, like, he doesn't move very fast. Even in his prime, he never moved fast. But you can't guard him. He never gets his shot blocked. He's going like 3 miles per hour. I remember the game in New York mid-December season and a half ago when both teams were on like 9-game winning streaks. What happened? 19,763 people on their feet at the Garden. Paul Pierce holding the ball. And it's almost like you knew what was going to happen. Sure enough, goes to the left side. Quick 17-foot jump shot. Garden fans are heartbroken.
Yeah, it is a bizarre game. You know, I always say that he plays like an old man at the JCC. You know, like, his style is not flashy at all. You know, he's sort of the perfect Celtic in that regard. But I think his style of play has kept him relatively healthy. I mean, 2 years ago, when people already thought he was over the hill, he had more dunks 2 years ago than in any season previously. Like, he's actually looked a little more explosive the last couple years than in years previous. And, you know, he's done a great job taking care of himself, and it's an awkward game, but, man, he's just good. He's one of those guys I would love to just get to see shooting around and see the percentage Paul Pierce shoots when he's just sitting around shooting on the court for fun.
I knew you grew up down in Maryland. How'd you become such a big Celtics fan?
My dad's best friend, my dad had two really close friends when I was a kid, one who was from Pittsburgh and one from Boston. And when the Celtics, my parents weren't into sports, so my dad's friend is who got me into basketball. And the combination of this friend of my dad's, and then the fact that my first cousins all lived in Boston, it just happened, you know. Really, unfortunately, not until 87. So they didn't win from the time I was a fan up until, you know, 4 years ago. And, you know, it's really crazy. I mean, I was a hardcore Celtics fan during the most unglorious times. I mean, there were some bad times in there. I have to say it's been, as happy as I've been with the resurgence, it has been weird to see the Celtics become this huge bandwagon team, even in, like, hip-hop circles. It's like, it's just very strange, because they were the most un-hip-hop team ever. And,
yeah.
You know, you to see how bandwagons will start when anyone's good. I mean, when I go to Celtics games in New York and New Jersey and seeing the fan base that's there, it's like, this group was not rocking with this team, you know, in the Reggie Lewis, Kevin Gamble era, and then later even in the Antoine Walker, Paul Pierce era, you know. But as soon as the big three came along, the Celtics kind of went back to their national following that they used to have in the 80s.
Yeah, no question. From a fan standpoint, it had to be crazy going from basically winning 21 games in the 06-07 season to all of a sudden, you know, having a parade downtown. I hope that can happen for me one day. Now, listen, I'm not asking for a lot. You guys and Laker fans, I just want one championship. If I get one, I'm fine. Obviously, you've only experienced one as a fan, because you said you became.
No,
a fan.
I understand how it feels, and it's different. You know, I can tell. You are the way you are about the Knicks. You are much more akin to the way you are about the Knicks, the way I am about the Redskins. And you know, as much as I love the Celtics, my for whatever reason, the Redskins are my affiliation that's the strongest. I think it's the combination of, you know, the championships when I was young and becoming a fan, and then the fact that when I moved out of Washington, my affinity became that much stronger, because as much as I love the Celtics, I'm not from Boston. And in fact, I really don't like a lot about Boston. So
right.
There's sort of some weird things in terms of that. Whereas with Washington, you know, not only are the Redskins the storied franchise that now is not who they once were, and I'm waiting for them to get back to glory, but then the fact that I love Washington and I'm not living there anymore, it just makes it even stronger. So I definitely understand how you feel. I mean, it would be rough, you know, and I commend the real Knicks fans. I mean, because I do think there are a lot of wishy-washy Knicks fans, but, you know, there is a sect of Knicks fans that are as hardcore as any NBA fans there are. I mean, I would put them at the absolute top of the list, you know, as far as hardcore fans. I mean, it's a shame, because when you watch the games on TV, all you see is, like, you know, rich models looking at their cell phones. But, you know, there is a real pocket and sect of Knicks fans that is super intense.
Oh, in the last 11 years, I've only missed, like, 6 home games. That's not crazy or anything, is it?
Oh, my God. That is intense. How good are your seats? I hope
you're
not
very seats. Well, my garden life is actually very interesting. I graduated high school upstate New York in 2001. I got to get into my hip-hop stuff with that in a little bit. But the first year I moved down to the city, I got a job downtown, and I got season tickets up at the top of the garden. And my tickets are located up there, but let's just say I got a lot of connections. Every game I'm always within, like, 15 rows of the court. Hopefully no one important heard that, but everybody knows
okay.
My deal at the garden. So I you know, I'm always around in the first 20 rows. Over the years, I just got, you know, get into radio and stuff. I just got cool with everybody. So it's kind of how I rolled the garden.
Okay,
that's
pretty good. So you still got your original bleeders, but people look at it. That's great. Cause I was going to say, to go that many times a year, especially once you, like, last year was the first year, frankly, that I started tasting great seats. I never in my years in New York, I kept being like, man, when is this gig going to get me some floor seats? And after getting them a couple times last year, I have to admit, I understand how ballers really have a tough time going back to regular seats. It is a different experience watching basketball from the first 10 rows than from the upper deck. I mean, it's like a different universe altogether.
Oh, no question about that. And like I said, my real seats are actually about, you know, 3/4 of the way up the garden, center court. But usually for 85% of the games, I'm in the first, like, 10 or 15 rows somehow. I don't know. I don't have an exact answer how, but I find my way there every game.
Hey, you don't need to know. No one needs to know. All you
exactly.
need to know.
Nobody needs to know.
But it is crazy. When I first went down there, and don't get me wrong, these are not remotely my seats. It was like a hookup or whatever. I was like, man, this is still something I aspire to have. NBA close is different. Like even the NFL, like you don't need to be first center in the NFL. You could be second deck even and have great seats that you're totally satisfied with. But with basketball, I find that being close is just tremendous. It's a different level.
Well, I'd love to bring you, not only bring you a game, but maybe bring you to a game and bring you early and bring you to shoot around before the fans come and have you watch the teams warm up and stuff.
That would be awesome.
If you ever want to come with me, you're more than welcome.
Oh, I'll definitely take you up on that when the Seas come to town. That would be a blast, man. That would be
yeah,
really
I'll,
cool.
Yeah, I'll put you down for the first Celtics game if you like. If you want to come to, I got two tickets to every game. You want to come to the Celtics game, it's on.
It's on. It's a mandate.
Oh, mandate. You got it. And I've always been telling people for the last few years, I'm like, Peter Roseberg, this guy is the man. He's like an older version of me. I mean, because I think we're pretty similar with the exception of the Knicks and the Celtics things. Now, what are your thoughts on the Knicks right now and their squad going into this year? Are you one of those guys? Are you making a lot of old jokes about my squad this year?
If you are, you
can admit it. It's okay.
No, I haven't really started. I haven't started yet, but I mean, I did at the end of last season, actually, and I definitely will. I mean, there's no question. It's impossible not to. It's sort of hilarious. But I do think that there's some potential good there. I make fun of it, but I do think that there's some value to the people that they have. And, you know, a lot of these teams, you know, for example, living in Washington, my wife is a huge Wizards fan. And, you know, I'm the first one to tell you that how important it is to have veterans on a basketball team. You know, you see, I always think about, I mean, you know, for my money, for who I would love to watch, play basketball up close, for my money, it gets almost no better and more exciting than John Wall. But to think about what he'd be capable of doing if he was surrounded by the right people and how much faster his development would be. You know, they've had to wait for John Wall to grow up a little bit, and it's been slow. I mean, he's, you know, fortunately they made that trade last year to get rid of a couple of guys on the team who just, you know, weren't the brightest or weren't the best people to have around him. And, you know, my point being that for the Knicks, experience isn't a bad thing. You know, it's they still have youth at a couple important positions. I think Nash would have been better than Kidd, perhaps, but that's kind of a wash. And I think Kidd makes sense. But I'll tell you one thing that you can feel positive about. I saw Carmelo Anthony the other day at the Jay-Z show on Saturday night. So only bad news for you, he was in the Brooklyn Nets arena, but he still appeared to be a Nick in every way.
As long as he wasn't wearing black and white. And I'll tell you what, the buzz for the Brooklyn Nets, man, I've seen more Nets gear in the last 2 weeks than I've seen in 15 years, man.
Oh, man. My buddy Robin Lundberg the other day on the radio was saying how, you know, anyone who thinks that Jay-Z's level of marketing isn't going to have a major effect on the landscape of basketball in New York just doesn't know, you know, what Jay-Z's influence is. And what they're doing right now in the middle of these 8 shows is such brilliant marketing. You know, I went Saturday and I went last night, and, you know, it is definitely creating, you know, some real excitement. And the fact that they have a pretty loaded squad certainly helps as well. But I talked to Carmelo the other day for the first time. We had a pretty extensive sports conversation. I did not know how deep that dude was in his general sports knowledge. I mean, Knicks history, basketball generally, sports generally. That guy's Carmelo's pretty sharp.
Yeah, no, he's a sharp guy. I've had a chance to speak with him a few times. See, is he when he sees you? Is he like a fan of your show? That's good. You talking about your show
in the morning? He said him and his wife listen all the time. I mean, she used to be on the station years ago, so I knew that she listened pretty regularly. But, yeah, he said they listen all the time, and he was into it, which is always neat. But then we ended up just in this random sports conversation with a couple other people, and I was just kind of blown away at how, you know, sometimes you meet athletes and you're almost disappointed that they're not students of the game the way you kind of wish they would be, but he really is.
Yeah, and then you have some people, the negative people that meet athletes, and they want them to be a jerk. Like, the first time I met Mello, I'm hearing that he's, like, this cocky jerk, and first time I met him, I talked to him for, like, 10 minutes. He's a cool dude. A lot of guys want athletes to be jerks on the other side. You know, it's messed up.
Yeah, I got nothing of that from him. He seemed like a really, he seemed like a cool dude. We had Shumpert in a few weeks ago. He's an interesting character. Smart kid.
Definitely.
Sort of brash, borderline cocky, but I think in a good way. I think the kind of guy you probably want to have on your basketball team. I think the Knicks should be good. I mean, they're going to be improved. You know, I'd be shocked if they weren't improved. And the only thing I don't like about the old guys on the team is it doesn't build for a future. And the one thing that they've really lacked is any sort of consistency. You know, and really building this team that is a unit over years. You know, even last year, throughout the year, seeing how much the team changed. So, you know, my hope would be that they're able to start kind of putting together a team that you can look at and say, all right, not just this year, but they're going to be good next year and the following year. And that's the only downside, potentially, to having guys who, you know, whose average age is like 39 years old, is that how long do they really have in the tank?
Well, I guess they see Carmelo Anthony, Tyson Chandler, and Amari Stoudemire. And obviously, you mentioned Shump could be there for a long time, but they see those three guys, and they say, all right, this is a 2 or 3 year window to win a championship. So if you got to bring in some older guys to fill in the pieces, like a Camby, Kurt Thomas, Jason Kidd, then hell, you know, if they have a chance, if this is what management is thinking, we have a chance to win a chip in the next year or two, we'll bring in some of the old guys, bring in the Rashid, bring in the Kurtz who can play, you know, 15 minutes a night and help those guys win. And that's their thought process right now.
Yeah, and I think Rashid was a big help to the Celtics 2 years ago. I think that those guys, if you rest them, can be really helpful come spring. But yeah, that's a good point. Here's another challenge they have is, right, you have this window, like you're saying, that you want to get it in. But during that same window, man, is the league tough. I mean, I thought it was tough enough between Miami and Oklahoma City, and now you can make a case that the Lakers are the favorite. You know, it is very tough.
Oh, no question about that. Peter, I know we could talk basketball forever, but having you on the line, I got to talk some hip-hop. And what I wanted to ask you, obviously, like I said, we're kind of similar, you know, white guys, hardcore hip-hop fans. Where you grew up down in D.C., what type of area was it, and how did you get so into become such a hip-hop head?
I grew up in suburban D.C., so in the Maryland suburbs, and, you know, I really got into hip-hop because of my brother, who's 4.5 years older than me, and we always visited my grandparents in Rockaway, and then starting in around 87, you know, my brother started recording the radio all the time, and we just started recording these radio shows, these legendary radio shows on BLS and KISS. And that was sort of the beginning for us becoming like really kind of fanatical about hip hop and taking it really seriously. And then as I got older, you know, and saw that I wasn't going to really be an athlete, it became like my thing, you know. So I got turntables when I was like 14 years old. And it was just, you know, hip hop was certainly popular, but I was, you know, certainly regarded in my circles as the guy who took it, you know, super duper seriously.
What was the first hip hop album that you really got into that made you fall in love with hip hop?
I would say the first album, like full album, that I used to listen to the entire thing, might have been Low End Theory. You know, I had listened to other things before that, kind of through my brother. But Low End Theory by Tribe Called Quest, I actually listened, you know, to the whole thing by myself and, like, knew all of it backwards and forwards. You know, that was in seventh grade in 1991. You know, that was when I really started kind of, you know, to the point that by the time Tribe dropped Midnight Marauders in 93... you know, I was a huge fan, like, awaiting the release of the album.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. And, like, real quick, I know my audience knows my whole story, but real quick, I actually left the Bronx when I was 8. I grew up in a small redneck town. I don't know if you ever heard of Oneonta.
I have heard of Oneonta, but I don't remember how, but I know it's up there somewhere.
Yep, it's like 20 minutes from Oneonta. My high school had cows next to it, no joke. And the summer going into sixth grade, the first hip-hop song I actually fell in love with was Regulate. And the first album I really... What's that?
No, go ahead. I'm just doing the math on when that was.
94, summer 94.
You were in 6th grade in 94, and I was... I just finished my freshman year in 94. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
So summer going into 6th grade, I fell in love with Regulate right after the Knicks lost in the finals. And I fell in love with Regulate. My first album I really got into was Warren G, G-Funk Era. That was my first hip-hop album. I fell in love with it. And then, like, I really didn't listen to any albums for 2 years. In the start of summer of 8th grade, I saw this video, who is my favorite rapper of all time and, like, one of my heroes now. Summer going to 8th grade, I see this video of this. And I bet I can tell you, paint the picture, and you can guess what it is. So summer 96, I'm in my friend's crib around August. There's this video of this guy rapping on a park bench with, like, five guys around him talking about if he ruled the world. Obviously, then you can get it now. And I was like, this guy is the man. I'm like, I don't know who the hell this guy is. This guy is like, the coolest dude in the world. So my friend got me, it was written for my birthday, but I didn't get it till November of that year. I popped that in. I was next to farms and up in the with the rednecks. I didn't know half the things Nas was talking about at the time on that album. I'm like, this is incredible. I mean, and I fell in love. And then I got the Fugees that fall. I got LL Cool J, Mr. Smith around that time. That's the first few albums I just fell in love with. But Nas, It Was Written, I still listen to that album. I actually heard It Was Written before I heard Illmatic. But It Was Written, I still listen to that album once a month. And that's the album that just, you know, blew me away.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because, you know, I'm always fascinated in music. You know, a few years can create a huge difference in perspective. You know, so you being in, you know, my perspective of Regulate was totally different than yours, even though I'm just a few years older. So even though we're almost the same age now, back then I was 14 years old. You know, 14, 15 years old when Regulate came out, and I had already was fully into, you know, all the West Coast music at the time. So it's funny, so my perspective on that album, you know, is that I really only listened to like three songs on the G-Funk era. I listened to like Regulate, This DJ, and one other random cut that I can't
probably
even remember
now.
Probably
Do You See, there was a video for that, probably Do You See.
No, not Do You See, I do remember that video. There's some other, it was a random cut, but like, I didn't even have it. My friend owned that album. Like, that was one of those albums I didn't buy. Like, my boy had it, and I would listen to it at his house, but I was like, I'm not buying G-Funk Era. And it's funny, and same with It Was Written, which I loved, but at the time, a lot of Nas fans, while we liked It Was Written, sort of were like, I don't know, Nas is changing. You know, and it's funny, because
really?
You go back... You know, if you would look up my interview with Nas that I did at South by Southwest, it was my Noisemakers interview with Nas, I told him that. I said, you know, at the time, a lot of people were like, I don't know about this It Was Written Nas, this Nas Escobar. You know, it was different. He was doing this drug persona instead of just the kid on Illmatic that was just observations. He went from being just observational to kind of being a bit more of a character. And, you know, with the way hip-hop was at that point and sort of the emergence of Bad Boy and Diddy, like, things were kind of changing a little bit. So, like, we sort of had mixed feelings about It Was Written at the time. And no one in the moment thought it was close to as good as Illmatic. Now, you go back and you look at It Was Written, and it was pretty great. I mean, there's a lot of great songs on it. There's just, you know, a few songs, I would say, that could have been left off It Was Written that would have made it, like, almost a perfect album. But it's just funny how age and time period really affects, you know, someone's perspective on music.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I'm 28, and a friend of mine who's about 35, lived in the city his whole life, he goes, Ant, if you were my age, he actually said basically exactly what you just said. He goes, because I heard Illmatic second. He goes, if you would heard Illmatic first and you were a little older, I'm not saying you wouldn't have liked It Was Written, but I guarantee you wouldn't have been blown away. Where I heard It Was Written, that first Fake Thug, No Love, I was just, like, blown away. I was just like, who is this guy? This guy's incredible.
Well, I think you're both right. I mean, I think his point's absolutely true. Although, when I heard the beginning of that song, The Message, I did think, oh, my God. I mean, and The Message is held up over time. I still, you know, get chills when I hear that song. But then as the album goes on, there are a few moments, whereas... You know, there's really not a dud. You know, there's one potential skipper on Illmatic, and I still wouldn't call it a skipper, but, you know, one song that I think you'd be remiss if you played it in your like Nas throwback set, you know. Whereas I think It Was Written may have a couple that I could skip.
Which one is that? Let me guess. Is that Nas Is Coming?
I'm not a huge fan of Nas Is Coming. Yeah, that's one of them. I'd have to look at the track listing now to tell you which ones I kind of like push past. But I just always remember liking like 85% of It Was Written. Maybe, I mean, it's still high. I still really think it was great. And a higher percentage ultimately than a lot of Nas albums until recently. You know, until this last album, he didn't have anything really close in terms of the level of consistency. I mean, it has, let's see, I'm looking at it now. The Message is awesome. Street Dreams is pretty good. You know, I don't love Street Dreams. I Gave You Powers, awesome. Watch Them's pretty good. Taking Them Blood's pretty good. Nas Is Coming is meh. Affirmative Action's awesome. Black Girl Lost is awesome. And then If I Ruled the World, I wasn't excited about it at the time. If I Ruled the World is kind of like, it's funny because now you play it and it's like real hip hop. If I Ruled the World, at the time I'm like, oh, If I Ruled the World, generic sample featuring Lauryn Hill, commercial, and it's just funny. Time just changes things.
That's so interesting. Since we're on the Nas thing, and he's one of those guys I've only got to meet once. I actually got a picture with him, and I hear he doesn't even do that stuff. I'm so fascinated by him. You've got a chance to get around him a few times, I'm sure, and you've interviewed him. What is he like, and why for 10 years? I'm not saying the last 10 years. Obviously, Life Is Good to Me is already a classic. But why sometimes does he just put out stuff that makes you scratch your head and you're like, is he not focused? And then he puts that album like Life Is Good and just blows you away. You know, having experience with Nas, why is that?
I think Nas doesn't... Okay, Nas cares about his craft when he feels like caring about it. But other times, he doesn't. And, I think sometimes it's because he was dealing with things that were personal and difficult and complicated, like just grown man life stuff. And then I think other times, he's just happy and, you know, Nas is well off, always has been. You know, as he said recently, he's been richer for much longer than he ever was poor at this point. And, you know, I just think he enjoys life and doesn't seem like someone who's so focused on constantly proving himself. So I think when he decides to do it, you get really good work. But other times, like, you know, I would see him and be like, what's up with Premier? What's up with, you know, Pete Rock or, you know, all the other producers that are out there that are, you know, Pharrell or Just Blaze or... And he's just kind of like, yeah, I need to get it, Primo. And you're like, well, get at him, dude. You're not. He's waiting. He's ready to answer your call. And, you know, I just don't think he thinks about it the way we do. You know, I don't think he – and it's funny because I think the reason Life Is Good is so good is because of what the title is. I think he's in a very good space. And, you know, I think at other times – him being in a good space, but maybe being less mature, he used that space to kind of F off. Whereas now, he used the good space that he's in to be like, let me just sit down and make a really good album. And the results, I mean, yeah, the album of the year so far. I think, no question.
Yeah, last summer, when I heard him on the Raekwon song and the Nasty single, I knew he was, I just said to all my friends, like, he's going to come back beyond strong.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know it was going to be that strong. You know, up until when it happened, I still was I was surprised and taken aback by how awesome it was. But what a pleasant surprise. It was truly one of those moments where it's like you got the Nas album everyone was waiting for. You know, it's like it's so rare in any field that veteran who once showed promise. You know, it's like I never got to have, you know, one of my favorite people that I'm most fascinated with, I never got to have Mike Tyson somehow crawl all the way back. He's made it on top of life again, but I would have loved to have seen him make it on top of the boxing world again. That didn't happen, you know, and Nas did. You know, Nas dropped an awesome album.
Peter, you there? Peter? Oh, Peter, you there? Hello? I'm not sure if we lost Peter. One second. Billy will get Peter. Peter, you there? Oh, Peter. Peter, you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, sorry, Peter. I lost you for a second. Internet radio, my bad.
No worries. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. And also, you've interviewed and been around so many, like, unique personalities. Like, I was listening to you on the radio last month, or a few months ago, when Eminem calls in. You've had a chance to talk to so many different hip-hop artists. Who's the guy that's, like, most unique or the guy that you're like, wow, I can't believe I'm interviewing him?
Oh, man. You know, we did a long form interview with Jay-Z, and you know, it was pretty cool. You know, same with Eminem actually. We did about almost 2 hours with Eminem, I think, or 90 minutes, and then I did about 90 minutes with or 75 minutes with Jay-Z. And you know, I'm not saying that, you know, hands down they were the most anything. Except that you pinch yourself and go, man, how am I getting this much time with this person? You know, that's really the special thing with, you know, my job is that, you know, because Hot 97 is what it is, sometimes it affords us these amazing luxuries like, you know, sitting in a room with just us and Jay-Z, and he's willing to talk about anything for an hour and a half because he's so comfortable at Hot 97, and those are the moments that you're just like, wow, this is crazy.
In your mind, now obviously Jay-Z and Nas are my two favorite artists of all time. In your mind, now you could say whether Jay-Z's records last few years are great or not. Being around Jay-Z the times you have and talking to him and knowing people that know him, is that why he is always so great? Because he probably, even though he's a billionaire, he probably never takes his pedal off the metal, right?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You know, I think that's one of the things that makes them different. Jay-Z is motivated by that. Jay-Z loves greatness. Jay-Z's always been on a quest to not just be the best MC, but to be great. You know, I think when you're realistic, I think if you're really honest with yourself about those guys, Nas is the better MC. You know, I think in terms of if you break down all the things that makes an MC special, I think at their best, Nas may be the better rapper, but Jay-Z will always be greater, and that's because that's what he aspires to be, and he busts his ass to be that way, and I don't know that that's necessarily a motivation for Nas, and I think Nas is probably okay knowing that he's the more pure MC. And not quite as rich or powerful. I think he's quite all right with that.
That's very interesting. Peter, I could talk to you forever, man, but I'm sure you got other things to do tonight. I'd love to have you on again. I mean, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I seriously could talk to you for like 6 more hours, but I know you got to wake up early in the morning tomorrow to do your show, and I'll be listening on my drive in the morning. But I really can't thank you enough. You're a guy I've wanted to try to get on for a few years, so I'm glad I got to meet you at Denzel Porter's show. So it's been a pleasure to have you on. Real quick, I know Denzel's my man. What are your thoughts on Denzel Porter, real quick, for the people that don't know about Denzel Porter? I got to get a little Denzel plug right there.
Oh, he's a really talented kid, man. I first found his videos and, you know, found this kid who did his own videos and wasn't even familiar with his music at that point. And my wife and I just sat in bed one Sunday morning, like, watching all of his videos, and I was like, this dude's awesome. And, you know, now it's just been kind of watching him progress. He's a special kid, man. He's a real special kid. So I'm excited. He's one of the kids that I'm excited about.
No question. Peter, like I said, can't thank you enough. If you really want to go to that Celtics game, man, I'll be in touch. You're welcome to come with me. We'll have a dope mandate. Hopefully I walk out happier than you.
All right, buddy. Thanks for having me. And don't be a stranger.
No problem, Peter. Have a good one.
Later, bro.
Take care. That was Peter Rosenberg from Hot 97. That was one of the coolest interviews I've done in a long time. Sorry for that little 30-second delay. That was awesome. And I talked Knicks with millions of people. It's awesome getting a chance to talk hip-hop with Peter Rosenberg from Hot 97 for those hip-hop listeners to my show. 646-478-5554 is the number, thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. Got to do one call, and then we're going to wrap this show up, because like I said, when the season starts, we'll be going full in. Please, let's go back to the phone, 646-478-5554, and let's talk to Ray from Brooklyn. Ray, you're on the air, thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. Ray.
Hello.
What's going on, Ray?
Hello?
Hey, Ray, what's up?
Well, what's up? Yeah, I'm calling about the Knicks, man. You know, a lot of people talk about the Knicks. The Knicks is too old, you know, all of that. They hated the Knicks. And, you know, it takes some time for the team, for training camp, everybody to be get on shape, you know, to everybody should know the roles, all of that.
Yeah, man. Ray, I definitely agree 100% with you on that. I'm sorry, I love most of my callers, but I don't know what the hell Ray was talking about. Anyway, it's been more than a fun show tonight right here on thenixblog.com, the Knicks Blog Radio. Great job out of my producer and call screener, Billy the Kid, always doing a phenomenal job. Much, much love to Peter Rosenberg from 596.com. If you have an opportunity, make sure to go to blog.com. That interview, make sure to follow me on Twitter and MSG. Hit me on Facebook, facebook.com/PDonnie. I'll be back on the air next week. Follow my Twitter for updates. Much love again, Pete Rosenberg from Hot 97. That was a phenomenal interview. Have a good night, everybody. Chop Billy the Kid. See you next week, everybody. Go Knicks.